G'day folks, welcome to Pause and Listen, a podcast series brought to you by Big Dog Pet Foods, the leading pet nutrition provider in Australia with over 20 years of experience in the pet industry. We provide educational resources for pet parents and are proud of being transparent in everything we do. The podcast series is hosted by me, Johnny Manning, and we bring you interviews and deep dives into pet nutrition, pet care, training, and regular Ask a Vet segments. So thanks for tuning in. Now get your tails wagging and we'll get yapping. Welcome back to another fantastic and informative episode of Pause and Listen. This is a Big Dog Pet Foods podcast and a place for you to come to find out all manner of pet information. My name's Johnny Manning. I will be your Sherpa throughout today's conversation. And I want to make a special, big, huge, enormous Big Dog welcome to my guest for today, Brittany Musket. Now, you may know her as the Pet Girl, but she is also the company trainer and veterinary BDM for Kong. Welcome, Britt.
Hey, it is good to be back yet again.
Yet again. We meet again.
We do meet again.
Kong, so look, unless someone's been living over a rock, they'll know what Kong is. But why don't you tell us what Kong is and what you do there?
Yeah, so Kong Company is the number one dog toy in the world. We are in over 80 different countries and I'm sure in millions of dogs' mouths worldwide. So we were around, or we were created in 1976.
Oh.
I know, it's a very long time. Absolutely long time. And yeah, it's, most people know Kong as like the rubber Kong classic toy, but we do lots and lots of different toys for all different reasons. And yeah, today we are all about talking about weight management and weight loss.
I like this topic actually, because there's an interesting stat, and I'm just reading the piece that you've actually written on the Big Dog website.
Yes.
And one of the stats that stuck out to me was that 47% of vets notice their patients, dogs, to be overweight, as opposed to 17% of pet owners. And now, is that because we're like, look at him, he's so beautiful. Isn't she gorgeous? She's not fat, she's just big boned. Isn't she beautiful?
Oh, gosh.
Is that the reason why?
So the actual study says that veterinarians estimated that 47% of their patients were overweight or obese, and only 17% of owners held a similar observation about their dogs, which simply means that only 17% of pet owners or pet parents held the same opinion. So can you imagine? Look, I'm not very good at math. So can you, what's 17%? Well, I mean, what's 17% minus, no, 47% minus 17%. That amount of people just have absolutely no idea.
How many people's that?
I can't tell you. I don't know. I'm not good at math.
Okay, you want me to help you out there?
Yeah, can you help me please? Dog toys. Okay. I am all about dog toys. Okay. Let's talk about dog toys.
So yeah. let's think of 100% as a whole.
Yes, like about, a whole. About
half of them, 47%.
Can we pretend this is a pizza?
Can you draw this as a pizza? There we go, pizza,
okay.
Right? So you got 8 slices in a piece of pizza.
Is it pepperoni?
There can be.
Okay,
but it's Queensland, so we might have pineapple on it as well.
Okay, it's Hawaiian.
Okay, so we got 8 slices of pizza, right? 4 of those slices, approximately, think that the dogs coming to them are obese.
That's right.
All right? And they're the vets.
Which is a wild statistic, by the way.
Right. Now, out of the 8 slices, not out of those 4, only 2 are the owners who think
That's wild.
That is wild.
That is wild.
But that's even less. But, I mean, 17, I'm giving you, that's 25% I've just given you. It's 17. It's less than that.
I feel like we've lost a lot of people from this small percentage conversation.
No, they're with us with the pizza chat.
The pizza, okay.
Yeah, they're with us.
Righto.
Okay, so what you're saying is that the majority of pet owners, 83% of pet owners, don't necessarily hold the same opinion as vets, that their dog may be a little bit overweight, needing a little bit of action.
I think the biggest statistic is overall, it's over 40% of pets, over 40% of dogs are considered overweight and obese, which is completely wild.
It's frightening.
That is seriously frightening, considering that when we think about obesity and overweight and animals being overweight, we're actually shortening their lifespan, and they're just so much more likely to experience, you know, early onset diseases, joint issues. There's just a stack of different things that we're really putting our dogs up against, or dogs and cats up against, when we allow them to be overweight. And the reality is that we can't, like, it's not their choice whether they're overweight or not. It's our choice whether they're overweight or not.
Well, they're going to eat if you put food in front of them.
That's exactly
right. Because their instinct is to, when food's there, they eat it. Because
if they're hungry, yeah, of course.
But I mean,
or not even if they're hungry. That's actually not true. Like, Labradors don't even need to be hungry. Yeah.
It's, you know, thousands and thousands of years of evolution will tell them if there's food there, eat it. Because they're scavengers by nature, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So you're right. It's on us.
It really is on us. And I think the challenge with dogs and cats being overweight is that we come from a place of love. And this is why this is a hugely sensitive topic. And that's why that statistic is a little bit scary. So, you know, where vets are saying, hey, your dog's overweight, only 17% of the people, of that group of people that are being told their dog's overweight, are going, yeah, actually, I agree with you and I need to do something about this. What about all those other dogs that... Like, what happens to their, like, does the owner go home and go, nah, I don't, that vet doesn't know what they're talking about. They've got no idea.
But maybe they go home with the best of intentions. Maybe they do.
Well, I think everybody has the best of intentions, really. Like, I find it hard to believe, and I'm sure there's a small percentage of people, but I find it hard to believe that anybody would want their animals to suffer or, you know.
In my opinion, you're right, no one wants that, right?
Yeah.
But surely this is something that sneaks up on you. Just like when humans, we put on a couple of kilos, we're like, oh, okay, these shorts are a bit tight on me. I need to take action.
Yeah.
It kind of sneaks up on you, right? I'd say it's the same with the animal, but it's also conditioning with the animal as well. So if you're giving your animal a huge plate of food three times a day, they're going to get used to it and they're going to start asking you for it, knocking on the door, hey. Where's my lunch? Where's my food? You know?
Knock, knock.
Exactly. So.
Or they do this one, and this is like, will burn everyone's ears, where they start going.
Right. I've got a.
That's so annoying.
I've got a nearly 15-year-old bulldog pug who will just sit there and just go, woo, woo, woo. And he goes on this rhythm of one bark and two barks. And I'm like, you hungry, fella?
Rom.
Yeah. Rom, rom. Oh, oh. And when he does it, he lifts his chin up and his front feet come off the ground when he barks as well.
It's our Stafford Lucy does that. She's like, I call it the entitled bark, where they're like, she goes, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. It's like, no, I'm serious about this one. I am serious.
Oh, like, man, you're
right. Yeah, I know that. I'm envisioning our Stafford Lucy doing that exact thing.
And,
yes.
But the thing is, I went away for a while. And Frank's grandma came and looked after him, right? I'm a morning person, grandma's not. So when I get up in the morning, Frank gets up with me, and after we've been for a walk and that, he's like, well, I'm up, you might as well give me some food. If he stays with his grandma, she doesn't get up early, he might only ask for food 4 o'clock in the afternoon. She'd give him one meal, and he's totally cool with it.
Yeah, it's definitely conditioning.
And he's totally cool with it. He's like, yeah, this is fine. I get to sleep in and I wake up and I, yeah, I'm hungry, I'll eat, and then I go back to bed. He's old, right?
Yeah.
But when I'm home, he's like, you better get me breakfast, dude.
Yes.
Because you've woken me up at 5 a.m. So there better be breakfast on the table. So it is, in my opinion, it's us, but it's how we integrate them into our lifestyle as well.
Yeah, so a funny story about that. So yesterday, we were cooking dinner and my husband, Rob, he comes out, he's in the kitchen, and he has a packet of chips. So I don't know what he was eating. He was eating something. And he's like, look what happens when I eat food or when I open the fridge, what the dogs do. And you couldn't script it any better. He opens the fridge or he gets his chips or what, I don't know what he was eating, but he walks out and you can see like our sliding doors next to the kitchen, and you just see all the dogs and they're all just sitting there with these faces. Like they've all got this like total expression. if I've been in the kitchen for like an hour, if I even walk into the kitchen, they do not care whatsoever. They know I will never feed them from the kitchen.
They go for the soft touch.
They do. However, if I put on anything that looks like running shoes, oh God forbid, we've got the, my gosh, this is so exciting. And they think they're going for a walk. So isn't it funny, like different people have different meanings, like what you were saying. And weight, like weight gain, weight management, there's lots of different things. So like pulling it back to weight management and I guess overweight dogs, there's a lot of people that firstly don't know that their dogs are overweight. So that's something to think about. Then with the people that do have dogs that are experiencing obesity or are overweight and they're trying to make a difference, there's definitely things that we can do to, I guess, assist with that and get their dog on the path. Like it doesn't have to be all doom and gloom. Like when we think of diets and we think of like restricting calorie intake or just daily intake, a lot of people get all negative on it because you think when we think of diets, I immediately think of giving up. Like my ice cream or giving up something really, you know, something more like chippies or chips. Did you know, actually, this is so not to do with.
It's what we do here.
Anything. But do you know that when you're eating chips, like hot chips, and you're allowed, and you're meant to be eating them, like you know you're going to get them.
You're meant to be eating
them? Yeah, like it's okay. You're okay. You've accepted in your mind, right. I'm eating chips, right? Yeah. Say chicken parmigiana, you have some chips, or you're at Macca's and you have some chips, right?
Copy.
It's called chips. But if you are not meant to be eating chips, it's called chippies.
Oh.
You're just like, I'm just going to have some chippies.
Can I steal some of your chippies?
Yeah, it is, hey. It is. It's totally a thing.
So, yeah, whether it's allowed or not.
It changes it.
Changes the name.
Anyway, that's completely off topic, but I think we can all resonate with that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, coming back to, I guess, weight loss and weight management, we think we have this, like, negative association with dogs being on a diet because we think, oh, it's all negative. They're going to not like it. They're going to be restricted. It's all going to be doom and gloom and I have to be so horrible. And actually, you can be quite creative with weight management.
How so?
So this is where Kong fits in. And this is, I think Kong is a really great way to incorporate two things that, well, we know that I'm particularly passionate about. So fresh food feeding, you know, obviously, and big dog, that's why we're here. And then Kong as well, because we're creating an opportunity for the dog to actually work for their food.
Right.
So if we're looking about, creating a healthy path to weight loss, let's talk about that. So if we have a dog, we've recognized that they're overweight. Maybe the vet said they're overweight. Maybe you've used the awesome guide that you guys have on the website, which is the hands-on approach. You know, you place your hand on either side of your dog's rib cage. If you can feel the dog's ribs without pushing in, and I'm doing the hand thing, nobody can see it.
But
you can see it, that's fine. Your dog's within the right weight range. But if you flip your hand over and you feel like your palm, like the squidgy bits of your open palm, your dog's overweight.
Can I ask you a question on that?
Go for it.
Okay, so with people. And
I don't know if it works for people.
Yeah, no. And you may not know this question, but I'll ask anyway. But, you know, you're experienced enough. Some people carry weight in different spots.
Yes.
Do dogs carry weight in different spots?
I think dogs have different body types for sure, definitely. So, you know, your sight hounds like your Whippets and your Greyhounds and all that kind of thing, they look a lot, say, different. They look very different to, you know, your bulldog or whatnot. However, I think that concept is as far as like pretty sound for the general population of pet owners. Like there's breeds of dogs that like are supposed to look particularly like trim and you're supposed to see their hip bones and things like that. And so those kinds of dogs, like, but we've got to think the general population of people they don't really have those dogs. And the people that specifically have that breed of dog are very in tune with how they're supposed to look and how they're supposed to be conditioned. So I think generally speaking, whether you've got a pug or a chi-chi, you place your hands on either side of the rib cage and there should be a really thin layer of fat over there, over their ribs, but you shouldn't have to push in to find their ribs. And so that's the first thing. So once we recognise that the dog is overweight, then what do we do about it? So the first thing is we opt for a species-appropriate diet and we look at reducing what the dog's currently eating. Now, this is an interesting fun fact that people, I don't know if it's a fact, but it's a fun piece of information that I'm about to deliver to you. So a lot of people, what they do is they go, okay, my dog weighs this much, so I'm going to feed my dog this much of food because that's what the guide says. Now, the challenge with that is to maintain a dog's weight. If you are looking to reduce your dog's weight, then you need to feed the ideal weight that you want them to be.
Oh.
So, for example, if your dog's 15 kilos and you need to get them down to 12 kilos.
You feed the 12-kilo guy.
You feed the 12-kilo guy. However, there's a big however. We do need to consider that, like, when we're looking at dogs that have huge lots of weight loss, we're not going to go, okay, this dog's 21 kilos and it needs to be 12 kilos. Let's feed it as a 12-kilo dog because that's too much. That's, like, ridiculous. So we need to really pay attention to, okay, what's the, overall, what's the dog's weight loss that we're looking at?
Would you say if you're in that situation, let's say you got a 22-kilo dog,
I know a dog that actually was in this circumstance. Right. So this is pug cavalier called Gracie.
Yeah, and it needs to be 12, right? So you've got to lose 10 kilos.
Mm-hmm.
Do you then sort of map out, okay, well, I need it to be 20 kilos in a month? And then you say, so I'm going to feed it the 20 kilo guide for a month. And you say, then I've got to get down to 16. Then feed, you know what I mean? Do you map it out like that?
The concept that you're referring to, yeah, definitely you have little micro goals, 100%. But, however, if you've got a dog that needs to lose a substantial amount of weight, I would be teaming up with a veterinarian or an animal nutritionist to make sure that we're doing it safely and we're mapping it out safely.
Because that's ultimately, that's not 10 kilos, that's 50% of its
body weight. Yeah, that's what people don't necessarily realise.
So for us to lose 5 kilos is okay, you've got to drop 5 kilos. For a dog, it could be a quarter of their body weight.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's exactly right. And for this particular dog, she did hit her weight and her goals, and we set micro goals for her. So the first thing, you know, going back to transitioning over to a species appropriate diet, that's one of the key things. You know, what you put in definitely does matter. So, you know, we look at a species appropriate diet as being the first thing that we need to adjust and change, and making sure that we're really aware of how much extras we're adding and feeding. So people don't realize, but you've got, say you have your normal big dog Patty, then people are like, oh, I'm just going to add a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I'm going to add, you know, just some blueberries on top, or I might add a bone or some sardines. Next thing you know, the food's completely blown out. So
you're talking about the portion size.
Yeah, the portion size is blown out. And you got to think training treats too. So factoring in your training food, factoring in, you know, any extras, anything that...
If you're giving him a tablet in a treat or something like
that. Yep, all of that needs to be considered. And also how and who the dog interacts with and whatnot. So a lot of people complain when they're with, for example, their, you know, the dog goes and stays with, say, their grandpa or grandma, and they just, the schmackos come out of the cupboard.
Don't they?
And they just come out, and in your mind, you just, your eyeballs are bleeding and your ears are bleeding, and you're like, oh my God, please do not feed that to my dog.
Yeah.
But you've got to be aware.
Frank's old now, so he doesn't care who he bullies, including me. But when he had his brother Walter, who was a mastiff.
Oh, Walter.
And when they were Frank and Walter as this incredible duo, they would never ask me for food. Like if I was eating, they wouldn't come near me because they just know they're not going to get it.
The dogs know. They would me just go too. To
everyone else.
Yeah, they know.
And they're like, why are they asking you? I'm like, because they know I'm not going to give them anything.
Yeah.
And it's not me being a bastard. I'm just like, they get their food. I'm responsible for their health.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, I guess that's a really important factor is being aware, firstly, of how much the dog's actually getting, number one. Number two is making sure that the treats that we're feeding align with the diet as well, and just being aware of how much treats we're actually feeding. I like the idea of using the dog's daily food allowance, and that's where Kong and Big Dog really fit well together, is that, you know, with our classic Kong that we can stuff and put Big Dog in and then work up to freezing it, we're actually using the dog's daily allowance, which is perfect because then it means we don't have to lean towards treats. We don't have to whip out, you know, all the other treats. The dog's still getting what they need in a day, but now they are getting biological fulfillment and they're actually working for what they need to do. So that's the first thing. So we opt for a species-appropriate diet. We reduce the daily intake. Now, what you can do is you can split up the meals into multiple meals per day. So what people tend to do is they think, I'll just feed my dog once a day, and then the dog pines and pines and pines for food all day because they're used to having multiple meals. You know, they might have had a bit of toast or the equivalent of chippies or whatever throughout the day. They might have had, you know, you're chopping up, prepping lunch and they've had the sandwich crust, or, you know, you have a kid and they're in a high chair and they're getting all the droppings and things like that. And then that suddenly changes and now you're micromanaging them and really managing their space. Dogs can get particularly scavengy, and that's where we start seeing things like, you know, raiding bins and whatnot. Right. Yeah. So what we want to do to prevent the dog from going, I'm starving, you're killing me, like, is we can split the meals up into smaller meals to help keep the dog full over the course of the day and not have them pining for food. So, you know, in like talking and keeping that with, you know, the biological fulfillment and, you know, actually enriching your dog and making your dog work for the food, you know, that's where, you know, we always say at Kong the key is three. So having multiple Kongs on the go, you know, you have one in the dog's mouth, you have one in the wash, and you have one in the freezer for later. And if you live by that concept, then, you know, I definitely live by that concept, and it was something that I guess I had going before I even started with Kong. I had like a bazillion Kongs. I used to feel like at one point I was single-handedly keeping Kong Australia alive with all my ridiculousness. But
they're so useful.
Yeah, that's right. So they're super useful in that sense, is that you can have it prepped ready to go. And what I do is I have like Sunday night, or, you know, or even Monday night when I'm watching maths, and embracing and all things, getting my conflict-based outlet.
I don't watch maths.
Well,
but I think Jake really needs to pull his head in.
It's Jack. Jack. Yeah, Jack. Yeah, they gave it to him. They've given it to him. Yeah, I think he does.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So sorry, you're Sunday night, you're watching maths.
Yeah, so, and that's when I stuff my Kongs, right? So I stuff all my Kongs, I put them all in the freezer, and then they're ready to go for the week. Or they're ready to go for the next day at least. And you just make it a part of your routine. And the dog gets used to, you know, having quiet time and, you know, and having that Kong in their crate or in their bed or whatnot. So it kind of, so we choose a species appropriate diet, we work out what our treats are, and we use our dog's daily allowance. So using Big Dog in a Kong, we pre-prep and we have it ready to go to provide multiple meals throughout the day.
Couple of things before you go.
Yeah.
Because I love these particular steps. I did want to say species appropriate diet. Just what is the species appropriate diet you're talking about?
So I always say to people when someone asks me what is species appropriate look like, okay, I strip it right back and I go, okay, common sense, what do you think a dog is designed to eat?
I love it.
Like what is that to you?
To me.
Yeah.
You're asking me.
Yeah, I'm asking you.
It's the mirror, the diet of the wild animal.
Okay, righto. So it's when I think of a species appropriate diet, I say, okay, what does you know, a cow eat?
Grass.
Okay. What does, I have to make these things that I actually know the answer to.
Yeah, yeah. Because yeah,
I just
yeah.
went to say something like, what does a crab eat? And then I was like, I don't actually know what crabs eat.
Maybe like little fish or something.
Maybe. Okay. What does a tiger eat?
Well, it's going to eat other animals, right?
It's an obligate carnivore.
Organ yeah. meat and more flesh than probably a dog.
Yeah, it's a predatory animal. Yeah. So, and then we look at a dog and we think about biologically what they're designed to eat, yeah. and they're designed to consume meat-based yeah. diet. And, you know, there's obviously lots of changes and we've modified the diet ever so slightly, because I guess the thing is that when we know better, we do better, and we can't mimic that of a wild diet. Like we can't. Most people are not feeding fur and whole animals, so and whole prey. And even then, like what dogs were doing, you know, hundreds of years ago versus what they're doing now is completely, or not completely different, but somewhat different. Like the animals that were roaming the earth 100 years ago had different nutrient access because they were free roaming and like the land has changed. So, I mean, like when we look and think about what species is appropriate for now, the dog right now in front of us, I think that, you know, a biologically appropriate diet is a diet that mimics what they would have had, but then with a little bit of spunk added to it.
Yeah, give us a little, make it a little bit better, but give it some great supplements and some, you know, coconut oils or fish oils.
Or just adding in those, just hitting off on those key nutrients that we need. And that's, and I guess that's what Big Dog does, that it provides that.
All right, so sorry, I just wanted to get that out of the way because you said, you know, species appropriate, and I'm like, great, let's just absolutely outline what that is. The other one that I wanted to touch on is with what you're saying here, it's just a lot of it's about being prepared, right?
Yeah.
And being a little bit diligent and a little bit attentive towards your animal.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's you're taking an animal's life, health and safety into your hands by being a pet parent. You need to apply the appropriate amount of attention and resource to make sure that animal can thrive.
100%. I think that the people that are thinking, the pet parents that are thinking about this kind of thing, and if you're already on the weight loss journey and stuff, you've already taken that amazing step. And even if you're thinking about it and you're going, oh, my dog might be a little bit overweight, you've already taken the first most amazing step to changing your dog's life forever. And I think that if you've already done that, you can already acknowledge you're not one of those, no, you are one of those 17% of people that is like, okay, yes, I need to do something. Then you're already on the path. And I think that perhaps it's not the gap between that, recognizing and being prepared, is not that big of a jump. It's when it just totally springs on you and you're like, it's like you don't go into a weight loss journey to be healthy and fit and active yourself and not be prepared and turn up on Monday morning at the gym with no water bottle and no towel. Like, nobody's doing that.
Right.
So I think being prepared is really important. Something else that I think a lot of people don't think about when they're looking at weight loss is the concept of ditch the bowl. And I spoke a little bit about it with using the dog's meals to biologically fulfill them. But like, let's explore that concept of ditch the bowl just a little bit more. So when you ditch the bowl, so you get rid of your stainless steel bowl and you're making your dog work for its food now, whether it be in puzzles or whatever, or say our Kong licks that we have, which are really cool. They've got like the suction on the bottom.
Yeah.
And you know, it's the dog has to work for their food and it gives them that outlet. It makes whatever they're doing, it lasts a lot longer, so it can prolong them, like keep prolonged activity happening. And then by the end of it, they're like stuffed, they're tired. They've like, hey, I actually had to use my brain and do this. So for dogs that are overweight, some people think, oh, okay, you know, we have to exercise this dog. You need to exercise your dog more. But it's the same thing. It's like 80% diet, 20% exercise, right, is what we say in humans.
Exactly.
It works the same with dogs. If we say 80% of, you know, when you're thinking about like this weight loss journey, you think 80% of the dog, we look at food and changing the food and how we deliver the food and making the dog work for it. We're creating that conflict-based outlet. We're preventing unhealthy gulping, like gulping of food, and we're challenging the dog. We're mentally stimulating the dog. We're going to tire the dog out versus that 20%, because we don't want to be exercising to extreme levels a dog that's overweight. Like, we don't want a dog that's got pressure on their joints or a dog that's morbidly obese running up and down and hitting the pavement because it's so hard on their joints.
And especially in, like, say, the summer in Queensland, these guys are wearing fur coats. Like, it gets hot.
It's hot, yeah.
You know?
So I think if we can tire the dog out, if we can help them be mentally stimulated, biologically fulfilled, eating a species-appropriate diet, and just changing their life, like, it helps on so many different levels. And I think as a dog trainer, my brain is about, like, I think a lot about conflict-based outlets for dogs, and I think this just makes so much sense. It just makes so much sense to, you know, actually provide dogs with a challenge and get them problem-solving and get them thinking and that kind of thing. And that's the kind of stuff that you do when you ditch the bowl. And, you know, when you're using Kongs and things, they actually, it's hard on them. They have to actually think about it and think about what to actually do to get the food out.
So ditch the bowl. That is completely get rid of. You never feed them out of a bowl.
I mean, you can, but like create opportunities for them where they don't have to you know. Yeah. So, you know, one night you might use your Kong Classic, another night you might use a Kong Licks, you might, you know, you might do something else, you might use a Wobbler.
Yeah.
There's just different ways for your dog to problem solve and challenge themselves or challenge themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You spoke a bit earlier about, you know, you did have a dog that had that sort of 21 or 22 to 12 kilo journey it had to make.
Mm.
Just give me a little rundown about, you know, I guess the process of recognition and then through to, you know, successful goal weight. Like, just tell me how that.
So that dog was Gracie. Her owner was an elderly lady, and she had just a memory challenge. So she didn't realise, she had a lot of love for the dog, and she didn't realise how that she was feeding her. And just with kind of like cognitive decline in humans, but unfortunately, you know, her owner had to go into a home, and what they realised was Gracie was just like insanely morbidly obese. And so it was actually my family that took Gracie on, and we knew straight away as soon as they took Gracie on that there were going to be a lot of challenges with getting her. Like, she wasn't a young puppy, but she, you know, she was 7 or 8 year old dog, I think. And there were a lot of challenges. So the first thing we had to do was switch her from a processed diet. Like, she was eating, you know, supermarket food and eating just like ice cream and all kinds of things. And we had to reduce her daily intake in a safe way. And we put her on, she was actually on Big Dog. And she started the journey. She started the journey on Big Dog and another commercial product. And then we also looked at supporting her gut health by using a probiotic and using a joint supplement. And yeah, so we started that journey. And then same thing, like exactly what we're talking about now, we reduced her intake. We gave her multiple meals per day. We changed the way she got her food. So she had to work a little bit harder for it. And then slowly but surely she wasn't walking like first couple of weeks, she could only walk like not even to the end of the street.
Mm.
And you think for a little cavy cross pug, like that's not that far really, but it's for her to lose, you know, it's like half her body weight. So, and then we slowly increased her, her walking, and then she got up to walking like 5Ks or something with my old man.
That's amazing.
But yeah, she unfortunately, because of her diet, she had to have half her mouth removed, essentially all her teeth out.
Yeah.
So it was limited in terms of bones and stuff, but they still keep up to date with her weight loss and things. And they saw so many different changes, you know, like, for example, they had to cut her nails less because she was able to walk more.
Of course.
You know, she still, they've definitely created a habit with her. She demands mealtime. Like if I ring, I think she gets fed at like 4 or 5 o'clock and it's Melbourne time. So if I ring Melbourne, yeah. I can hear her in the background doing her little like,
give me my food.
Yeah, but it's only if my dad's in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, if it's any other family members, she's quiet.
Yeah, that's funny.
But for my dad, she knows. And they're on a journey, I think, where sometimes maybe, you know, she does fluctuate in her weight and she does need to come back down. But, yeah, as long as when you first become aware of it, you can't not be aware of it going forward, you know. The other thing too that's really challenging is like when people are trying to get their dogs to lose weight and their dog actually has a medical condition, like an overactive thyroid, right, or things like that. So that's definitely a factor and that plays a role. I think whenever you are on the weight loss journey, I think the first thing that you need to do is consult with your vet and consult with your vet and let them know what you're doing, just so, you know, you can have support in that space and just make sure that you're on the right path. And
And it's not Everest, right? It's not the end of the world if you know you find out that your your dog does need to lose a few kilos.
No, not at all.
It's not Mount Everest. It's highly manageable.
It's motivational. I feel like it's motivational. You know, at this, I don't know about you, but at the start of the year, I seriously reflected on my own weight and was like, what have I done? I just had a really busy year last year, and I think I let my health take a backseat to the busy lifestyle that I had. And it wasn't until this year I was like, okay, nah, I'm going to be serious about this. This is for real. I want to get active. I want to be healthy, get back to, you know, taking the dogs for hikes and climbing, you know, not that I really climbed many mountains, but climbing mountains.
Yeah, why not? It's a cool thing.
No, like
thing
Mount Biwa.
Yeah, that's a good mountain to climb.
Yeah, that's a cracking mountain to climb.
Absolutely.
I know. Yeah.
The Glasshouse Mountains. Yeah. But that's great. So, it is. It can be motivating for yourself as well. But, I mean, obviously, you need to manage that, as you just said, you need to manage your dog's workload, right? You can't just throw your dog into doing a 5K with you straight away.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. It's all about just doing it periodically. Or, like, I guess you just do it. You set micro goals. That's the important thing. I think the biggest takeaway from this is about being prepared and setting micro goals and being a bit strategic. And the other thing, too, is I think as pet owners, we need to make sure that we're not getting our knickers in a knot if someone does identify that our dog is overweight.
A vet
or someone else.
If someone in the street says it.
If you walk past me.
There's a fight in words. someone at the pub says, "Who's your dog's fat?" I'm like, really?
So overweight dogs is a huge pet peeve for me. Like, it's a really... Because it's hard to watch other dogs struggle, but then if you don't know, you don't know. And, like, that statistic, like, I keep going back to it. Nuts. Like, it's only 17%.
But there's subtle ways of doing it, right? It's like, oh, this is a beautiful dog. What are you feeding him? I ask that so much.
Do you? Yeah.
What are you feeding this guy?
So I just love my husband, Rob, because he just totally just... goes on the fresh food diet train, like, and just says it. And he's just like, because, you know, the thing is that if you have dogs that are walking examples of, like, awesomeness, you know, like, our dogs look so fit all the time when we walk, especially, so, I mean, Binti, our Sheltie, is a little bit hard because she's fluffy. But, by the way, you can totally still do that hands-on test if your dog's fluffy. So if you have a Samoyed, it doesn't mean anything. Yeah. Like, you can still do that hands-on test. Anyway, and we walk around and, like, Lucy and Vixen are, like, athletes. Like, they look awesome. They're, like, conditioned, they're fit, they've got muscles on their muscles. And you can think, like, a little Stafford just is, like...
A little tank.
I built like a brick shit house, but just is, like, fit and muscly. And, you know, when we're out and about and we're walking around... people make comments about it, like, "Oh, geez, your dogs are really fit, aren't they?" And he's great. He just jumps on and just says, "Oh, it's all about what you feed them." And he just goes, and I love it. And I just sit there like a proud little wife, like, "I've trained you so well."
Yeah, but I mean, but that's the proof's in the pudding, there, right?
Well, it really is. And I think when you talk about it with other people, I'm as like subtle as a sledgehammer, or as rough as Hessian undies with my. Delivery and my face says a lot of things. I used to say with my border collie, I used to say, "Oh, look, there's a chunky version of you, Vixie."
Oh, Jesus.
It's not very nice.
The thing that I get is
I've gotten better.
I've got a bulldog pug, right? So they're chunky fellas to begin with. He's not overweight. He's fine. Right?
Mm.
But someone's like, "Oh, you know, he hasn't missed a meal. He's been in a good paddock." I'm like, "Any mirrors at your place, mate?"
I think, though, that what we do need to understand, though, is that people have this attitude sometimes that, like, the perception that certain breeds are meant to be overweight. So, like, Labradors.
I'm not saying he's meant to be. He's the way. He's a stocky breed.
Yeah.
He's healthy as. He's not overweight.
Yeah. It's. I think, though, that generally speaking, though, people look at, say, Frenchies and Bulldogs and... Amstaffs and Staffies, and they think, "Oh no, they're meant on Labradors, and they're meant to be like that." God, and they're not. They're not meant. Not there's not a single species that is meant to be overweight.
There's not an animal in the world that is meant to be overweight.
Well, that's why it's overweight.
Exactly.
It's called overweight.
It's crazy.
The weight that they're meant to be, they're over it.
They're over it.
They're over it.
There's a weight that's here, and their weight is over that guide weight that they're supposed to be. It's over. So they're called overweight.
Yeah. So that's the other thing that's challenging, I think, that I think a lot of people don't realise or recognise. They think that we're just normalising weight, possibly.
The other thing I wanted to say is that to anyone out there listening, we know you love your dog. There's no
question. There's no doubt about that. We're not questioning
any love or, you know, absolute care that you take for your animal. But sometimes, as you said, you just can't see it.
So how do we, I guess the question that I've got is how do we, if you can't see it, how do you know?
Well, you've got to listen to your vet. Because if your vet says your dog's leg's broken, you're not going to go, is not.
Tricking.
You know.
Just trying to suck money out of me.
If your vet says, hey, you know what, your dog probably needs to lose 2 kilos to be at its optimum weight. And you go, oh, it does not. Yeah, okay, the vet's telling me something.
Definitely need to listen to your vet. But do you think that potentially that's a tricky topic? I think if I was a vet, I mean, actually... Okay, if it was, if I was,
if a normal person was a vet.
If a normal person was a vet and it wasn't me, how did you know what I was talking about?
Knew.
You do. Okay, if you weren't me and you were someone really nice, no. Okay, if you were any normal person,
yeah.
Okay, and you're a vet, do you think, I think that's a really hard topic to say. Like, how did, what do you say? Oh, geez, he's gained a bit of weight. Oh, and then... I've noticed, because I go into vet clinics a lot, I often hear this conversation happening in front of me. And so sometimes it comes down to, you know, the lovely vet nurse will be like, hey, oh, he's gained 2 kilos.
Vets have got it sorted. They've got it sorted. Don't you, as soon as you go into the vet, can you just chuck him up on the scales?
Yeah, but.
And everyone looks, and I know exactly what it was last time.
And yeah, but
I'm, so it's like, just chubby, I think he needs to go on the scales. Put him up there and you're like, oh, he was, or you say it's 22.5. What was he last time? Oh, last time he was 20. Oh.
Yeah, but what, the thing that I'm thinking about though is I've heard this conversation happen. I've totally heard this conversation happen. And I feel like everybody, I feel like I've only ever seen the other, not 17% of people, the other people that are like, oh, yeah, it was Easter and it's like whatever public holiday it was. Oh, it was just, it was Christmas. Oh, yeah, we're just recovering from, it was Valentine's Day. We're just recovering from Valentine's.
It was Labor Day.
It was the King's birthday. What's another dumb public holiday that we have?
I don't know.
It was the Eckhart Show holiday.
Eckhart Show Day. He had like a foot-long hot dog. What do you want, you know?
Ew, not species appropriate.
Yeah, exactly. But if I'm a vet, I've had to come out and tell people their animals passed away. I'm not shying away from a conversation about an animal's weight. Do you know what I mean? There's harder conversations for a vet to have.
I feel like vets have a really hard... I really feel for vets and vet nurses. I think their job's incredibly hard and I feel like they really cop the brunt for a lot of pet owners and things. And I feel like for them... I think we have to get better at identifying ourselves and not relying on our vets to tell us.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
And shout out to all the vets. We love you.
We love you.
We love you. And to all the pet owners out there, there's no Medicare for dogs and cats. So if you want your cat to be healthy and it has to go to a vet, pay the money. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, that's right. That's another podcast in itself, isn't it? 100%.
We love the vets. All right. But you're right. You know, a lot. And with a species appropriate diet, you're going to reduce your vet bills exponentially, and that's just a fact.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you have less, you know.
Less illnesses, less issues.
Yeah, that's right.
But just back to that thing, I think I understand vets have got a very, very difficult job. Vet nurses have got a difficult job too. But having that weight conversation, it's important that they do it. But it's you're right, it comes back to the owner. And the owner's got to be on it.
I think we need to. I think we need to empower pet parents to have that hands-on approach 100%. And identify. And it's like we always say, you know, when you know better, you do better. And it's the same for me in the space of training. So, like when we're talking about food and overweight dogs and stuff, it's like let's empower pet owners to have a hands-on approach and recognize and stop normalizing obesity or overweight and obesity. It's the same thing in the dog trainer's perspective. Like I'm always talking, especially in vet clinics, I talk about this a lot, is, you know, the reason why we see problematic behaviour is because the lack of biological fulfilment and enrichment that we are providing to our dogs and their ability, you know, like dogs need to play. Like we need to have you know, an outlet for dogs and things like that. And I feel like if we can empower pet owners to start thinking like that and talking like that, they're going to have a better life for their dog. So this is why I really like this topic, because it ties in the two things that I'm hugely passionate about. It's about nutrition and then enrichment and biological fulfillment and giving the dogs the outlet. And the thing I really love about, you know, like going back to the classic Kong, the thing I really love about it is how versatile it is. So, like, you know, we talk about the enrichment and like if we're using this in a weight loss plan, there's so many other things that it can be used for. So, you know, mentally stimulating the dog we've talked about. We've talked about, you know, how to use it as a bowl in itself. But, you know, using it and it's a game of fetch, like it's really unpredictable and things like that. So I feel like it's not just about the toy that you get or this Kong that you get, that it just becomes a food dispensing thing. Like you've got the play happens after the food as well, you know, like, I mean, just rest your dog for like 30 minutes or an hour or whatever, like suck it into bloat territory.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? Like there's so, it's so versatile, and that's what I love about, that's what I love about the, like the Kong toys is that they've got so many different purposes and they're so versatile in what they do. But yeah, that's, I think that, those two things I love. I love, you know, being passionate about species appropriate diets and, you know, tying that into getting dogs on a healthy plan to weight loss and then tying that in with, you know, really tapping into their instincts and their senses and things like that. So,
and as we touched on before, just be a little bit prepared. Put the time in. Think ahead.
Just thinking ahead, that's right. Thinking ahead and, you know, if you need to do to-do lists, then make a to-do list. Stuff multiple Kongs. The question we often get asked with when people are stuffing their Kongs with Big Dog is how do you then clean your Kongs?
That's because a great question.
Sometimes the food doesn't always come out. Oh. So there's a few things that you can do. Number one is I don't know why it took so long, but we have a Kong cleaning brush now.
God.
I know. It did take a while to get
the
there.
The aha moment.
It is the aha moment. So we have the Kong cleaning brush that you can use, and that's just awesome to get the little bits and pieces out. I also use it for packing the Kong with Big Dog in particular. It is super helpful. The other thing that you can do is our Kongs are dishwasher safe, so you put it on the top rack and you just take the heat cycle, that last little heat cycle off, and that's how you clean them. Or give them a good scrub, soak them in some soapy water, and you're good to go again.
Happy days.
Pack and freeze. Pack and freeze.
Pack and freeze. That's how we keep our animals, our dogs, at their optimum weight. Britt, that's been an amazing, informative and honest chat. I know we're always going to get honesty from you, so that's cool. Yeah, so I just want to just circle back and just say, you know, species appropriate diet, portion control, the way you feed.
Yep, multiple meals per day.
Incorporate the daily food into the treats rather than over and above.
Yeah, so using the daily food allowance, yep.
Yeah, and then just be planned, think ahead.
Think ahead, stuff, the key is three. So stuff your Kongs, have one in the dog's mouth, one in the dishwasher, and one in the freezer ready to go for later.
Brittany Musket, you might know her as the pet girl. Today I know her as the company trainer and the veterinary BDM at Kong Australia. Yes. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks, mate.
Thanks so much for having me.
As always, if you need any further information, please don't hesitate to give the guys at Big Dog Pet Foods a call. You can get on their website, which is www.bigdogpetfoods.com. And there is an amazing resource section on that website, and an article Brittany wrote is actually on the website in the education center as well. So look, if you're not feeding a species appropriate food for your dog, and if you're not feeding Big Dog, get on the website and have a look at the testimonials on there and all the info that's on there. This has been another episode of Pause and Listen. My name is Johnny Manning. I've had an absolute ball talking to my guest, Brittany Musket, and I'll catch you next time. But in between now and then, give your dog a scratch for me and Britt. Take care. Bye-bye. Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast. For more information and content, visit the Big Dog Pet Foods website. Please note that the information discussed in these podcasts is general in nature and has been provided in good faith for educational and informational purposes only. The information provided is not, nor is it intended to be, a substitute for professional advice or care.
If any of the topics discussed raise questions or concerns for you regarding the health of your pet, we recommend that you consult your veterinarian or trusted pet health provider for an individual assessment and advice. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.